You know, brethren, the Bible tells us of a young man of about 16 years old. And it's a very interesting story in the Bible that happened thousands of years ago. A young man who grew up with a prosperous family. He was a handsome man. He was very strong. But one day, suddenly, all of a sudden, he found himself captive in a heathen nation serving a heathen god. I mean, a heathen king, not a god. How many of you think you know who I'm talking about? Well, if you're thinking Joseph, you're wrong. No, we're not talking about Joseph today, although Joseph fits that description as well. Young man, his name is Daniel. And when you think of Daniel, you're probably thinking about the last few chapters of Daniel, telling of the end time, the prophecies that are recorded there. 9 out of the 12 chapters are dedicated to revolving around the dreams and the visions and the prophecies of Daniel. But that's not what we're going to focus on today with the book of Daniel and the life of Daniel. So if you want a title for this split sermon today, you can title it Lessons Learned from Daniel. And, you know, why choose Daniel today? Why do I choose Daniel today? You know, well, there can be many reasons why I chose it. But, you know, in the Bible, there are 2,930 characters listed in the Bible. 2,930. And, you know, Daniel is one of the very few that nothing negative is recorded or written about Daniel. Nothing. Joseph was one of the others. Another reason that I wanted to go through Daniel today is that the lessons that can be learned there are very relevant to our lives today, the lives that we live, even though it was recorded thousands of years ago. You know, Daniel's enemies, including Satan, couldn't find anything wrong with him. It's recorded. They couldn't find anything wrong with Daniel. Ezekiel even said that he was a righteous man, righteous as Job and Noah. And he recorded that 3 times in the book of Ezekiel. But before we get into Daniel, I would like to give you a little background about Daniel. What time? Well, the story of Daniel in the book of Daniel takes place 400 years after King David and 600 years before the birth of Christ is when it takes place. You know, the book of Daniel covers 75 years. That's all it covers. The total book covers 75 years. And the beginning of the book, Daniel is around 15 or 16 years old. But by the end of the book, Daniel is in his late 80s, early 90s. Daniel goes from being a prisoner of serving to serving a trusted counsel to the succession of the Babylonian and the Persian rulers. He was very high up in the end of the book and through most of the book in his positions. Let's take our Bibles and turn over to chapter 1. Chapter 1, we'll begin reading here and give you the background of what's going on in the book of Daniel, what takes place, just a refresher here. It says in verse 1, in the 3rd year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. He took over Judah. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hands. God was punishing, you could say, Judah for its worship and the things that they were doing. So he gave it over to him. So it says, with some of the articles of the house of God, which is carried into the land of Shinar, which is another name in the area of Babylon, to the house of his God, and he brought the articles into the treasure of the house of his God. Then the king instructed Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, to bring some of the children of Israel and some of the king's descendants and some of the nobles, young men in whom there was no blemish. They were good-looking, gifted in all wisdom, possessing knowledge, and quick to understand, who had the ability to serve in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the language and the literature of the Chaldeans. That's who they were looking for. Daniel was one of those young nobles that was taken captive in King Nebuchadnezzar's palace, taken back to Babylon. Now, from Jerusalem to Babylon, you might say, well, it's kind of hard to picture. You look on a map and look at that and see how far that is. But just to give you in today's vernacular, from Miami, Florida, to a little above Washington, D.C., is 900 miles. That's how far they traveled. Imagine yourself traveling that by foot, that distance to go to a foreign land in Babylon. When they got there, the palace, they said some of the walls of that palace were 20 feet thick. That's how thick his palace walls were. The walls around the city of Babylon were 300 feet high. They were 35 feet below the ground to prevent people from tunneling in to the city. That's how it was designed. And those walls were 80 feet thick. Can you imagine 300 foot high? That's not a 30-story building, but somewhere probably a 25 to 28 when you count the spaces between an 8-story building probably, but that's huge wall to be 80 feet thick. That was the city of Babylon is known as the wonder city of the ancient world. Nebuchadnezzar's palace was one of the most magnificent buildings ever erected on earth. This is where Daniel and the other young friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, those were his other friends that were picked, were to be taken. While Daniel and others of the Jewish nobles were living in the king's palace, the rest of the captives were not living there. They were living a different life on the outside. It was a very different life for the captives. You know, we sing a song in our hymnals over the years, "By the Waters of Babylon." There we sat and wept. They were in distress of not being in their homeland, of not being where they knew they were to be, Jerusalem. So I ask you, did Daniel conform to the person the king of Babylon wanted? As it's described here, these are the things in verse 4 that he wanted. Did Daniel conform to those things in his life? Well, let's see. Lesson number one. Remember I said the lessons of Daniel. Lesson number one is identity theft. Satan uses identity theft. We hear about identity theft all the time today in the society we live in. In the last 5 years, in current times, 27.3 million people have been victims to identity theft here. Their identity has been stolen. And it seems to be becoming more and more common and rampant among us. You know, some people have even reported that they didn't get their income taxes because someone else stole their name and their Social Security number and they received the money instead of them. But it's becoming a common problem. King Nebuchadnezzar tried to take away Daniel and his friend's identity right away. And that's what Satan wanted. He wanted their identity to be forgotten of where they came from, who they were. You know, the first immediate thing he did, he changed their names. He changed all their names. Daniel's name means "God is my judge." His Babylonian name was, if I could say this correctly, Belshazzar. Belshazzar, which means Bel's prince. And Bel is the name of the chief god of Babylon. They wanted Daniel to be the prince, the chief prince, changing his name to Belshazzar. And we know the names Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Those are the Babylonian names given to them. Those were not their real names. They were Babylonian names. Instead, the new Babylonian names that they were given were the sun god, the earth god, and the fire god. That's what their names were changed to, the meaning of their names. But their original names before captivity meant Shadrach, the Lord is gracious. That's what his name meant. Meshach, who is compared to God, comparable to God? And Abednego, the Lord is my helper. You know, Satan, of course, is behind this. He wants to do anything to make them to forget where they came from and who they were and try to steal their identity. Let's go back, read verse 5 here. It says, and the king appointed for them a daily provision of the king's delicacies and of the wine which he drank, and the 3 years of training for them, so that at the end of that time they might serve before the king. They were to have this training. They were to take. So they have now a new home, a new land. They have new names. And now they are learning a new language and customs. Their identity is being taken away from them as young men. At least it appears that way. That's what Satan wants. He wants them to lose that identity and forget who they were and start becoming Babylonians. Let's skip down to verse 8, though. It says here in verse 8, but Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's delicacies, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore, he requested of the chief of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. It says, and now God brought Daniel into the favor and the goodwill of the chief of the eunuchs. And as the story goes on, we know that the eunuch agreed, because God gave favor, it says, in his eyes, to work with Daniel and these men. And they said, we will not eat, because many of those foods possibly could have been unclean foods or whatever, and the delicacies that the king has. And they agreed not to eat it. But, you know, the king assigned them a daily amount of food and wine from the king's table. And it's said that a way to a man's heart is through his stomach, as the saying goes. Well, Satan is trying to change the hearts of these men by giving them the good life. He wants them to have the good life. And feeding their fleshly desires, he wants them, give them perks in the palace. He wants to give them privileges to win them over and to make them loyal to his service. He's like wining and dining them to change them over and say, look, this is the good life you're going to have here. You know, you just serve me, forget about your God. Well, for us today, if Satan can feed our fleshly desires, it could cause us to make compromise on our beliefs in our life. Thankfully, Daniel did not lose his identity, did he? He didn't lose his identity. We go on and read the story here that at the end of those 10 days, these men were better looking, better off, because they did not eat the delicacies or take of that wine. In verse 15, it says, at the end of 10 days, their countenance appeared better and fatter in the flesh than all the young men who ate the portions of the king's delicacies. In verse 17, it says, God gave them knowledge and skill. Yes, he did. He gave them the knowledge and the skill to learn and understand the language and wisdom. And Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. God gave him that. But down in verse 19, after their time was up, of days of learning this and all that, they were brought before the king. It says in the end of verse 19, we'll read 19. Then the king interviewed them, and among them all, none was like Daniel. And these are their original names. Hannah, Mishael, Azara, and therefore they served before the king, and in all manners of wisdom and in understanding about which the king examined them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers that he had in his realm. So God blessed them for not defiling by sticking to their beliefs and their laws, and they didn't lose their identity. Now, neither did most of all the other captives in Babylon. After 70 years of being in captivity, is what it was, 70 years they went back to Jerusalem, and they retained their identity. But prior to that, 100 years earlier, Israel was taken by Assyria captive, weren't they? And to this day, they lost their identity. They're known as the lost 10 tribes of Israel. They lost it. Now, we don't want to ever forget our identity as the children of God and followers of Christ. You know, this Passover helps us to remember as we observe it each year as a reminder who we are and what we're supposed to be. The second lesson that we can learn from Daniel is discipline. Discipline. Now, I know that word has a bad connotation, discipline. But I'm not talking about disciplining someone, punish them, as you may think. That's the verb. I'm talking about the noun, discipline. Discipline yourself. You know, there's a scripture over in 1 Corinthians 9. Let's turn over there and read it. 1 Corinthians 9. Where Paul's talking in verse 24, he says, Do you not know that those who run in a race all run, but one receives the prize? Run in such a way that you may obtain it. And everyone who competes for the prize is tempered in all things. Now they do it to obtain a perishable crown, but we for an imperishable crown. Therefore I run thus, not with uncertainty. He knew he was disciplined. Thus I fight, not as one who beats the air, just swinging your arms around in the air and not really fighting. But I discipline my body and bring it into subjection to God, lest when I have preached to others, I myself should become disqualified. So the type of discipline that Paul is referring to is a type where he keeps his body under subjection to God. Daniel was an example of a man who kept himself disciplined in several areas as you read the story of Daniel. He was disciplined in his faith. He was disciplined in his prayer, as we'll see. He was disciplined in courage. He was consistent. And lack of compromise, he was disciplined in. Daniel writes in chapter 3 about his friends. Let's go over there. Daniel writes about his friends that we know as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who also held themselves under subjection to God, like Daniel. And this event takes place 20 years after they've been in captivity. 20 years after they have been in Babylon, this takes place. Let's read Daniel chapter 3, verse 1. Nebuchadnezzar the king made an image of gold whose height was 60 cubits and its width 6 cubits. He set it up in the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. Now the total height of that image with the base and the image itself was 90 feet tall. That's what that means. And King Nebuchadnezzar sent word to gather together the satraps, who are the princes. That's another word for it. The administrators, the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the judges, the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image which King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Everyone was to be there. You know, we might ask at this point, well, where was Daniel? What we're going to read about, Daniel wasn't there, was he? But I looked in some of the commentaries, and they say it was probably he was on some distant part of the empire on state business, and the summons had not time to reach him. And also that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego's enemies found it more political to attack them first because they had less influence with the king, and then go after Daniel. You see, the chapter just before this one, in one of my last title headings, it says, Daniel and his friends promoted. They were just promoted, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, to a higher position just prior to this event. Now, I don't know the exact time and how long it took place, but King Nebuchadnezzar had just promoted these three guys. So we go down and we read verse 4. It says, then a herald cried aloud to you, it is commanded, O peoples, nations, and languages, that at that time you hear the sound of the horn, flute, harp, lyre, and psaltery in sympathy with all kinds of music, you shall fall down and worship the gold image that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. That's what they were to do. That was the decree that had been set. Then down in verse 8, it says, therefore, at the time, certain Chaldeans came forward and accused the Jews. They spoke and said to King Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever. O king, have made a decree that everyone who hears the sound of this horn, lyre, and the music that was being played there, worship the golden image, and whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. And whoever does not fall down and worship, cast in that furnace. Therefore, certain Jews whom you have set over the affair of the province of Babylon, now they're bringing this, the Chaldeans are bringing this to his attention because they're very jealous of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and their positions. It says, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, these men, O king, have not paid due regard to you. They do not serve your gods or worship the god image which you have set up. Then King Nebuchadnezzar, in rage and fury, gave the command to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So they brought these men before the king. Now, he had just promoted these same guys. He knew them. They worked for him. And Nebuchadnezzar spoke and said to them, is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the golden image which I have set up? And skip down to verse... let's read this. He says, he gave him a second chance here. He says, now if you are ready at the time you hear the sound of the horn, flute, harp, and lyre, and psaltery, and symphony, with all kinds of music, and you fall down and worship the image which I have made good. So he's given him another chance. But if you do not worship, you shall be cast immediately into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. And who is the God who will deliver you from my hands? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. They didn't compromise. They didn't try getting out of it. They didn't try twisting it in any way. If that is the case, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us from you, your hand, O king. But if not, let it be known to you, O king, that we do not serve your gods, nor will we worship the golden image which you have set up. They pretty much gave him a straightforward answer back. They didn't cut any corners. Nebuchadnezzar, verse 19, was full of fury with that answer. And the expression on his face changed toward Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Therefore, as the story goes on down, he commanded his mighty men to go and heat the furnace 7 times hotter than normal. And they bound them in their robes and their clothes. And they bound them and they put them in the furnace. And as they opened that door, those mighty men were killed from the fire. But they threw them in there. And as the story goes, there were 4 people in there. And it's like, wait a minute. Did we not cast, verse 24, 3 men bound into the midst of the fire? They answered and said to the king, "True, O king, look." He answered, "I see four men loose, walking in the midst of the fire, and they are not hurt, and the form of the fourth is like the Son of God." It was an angel, is who it was, if we go on to read. Then Nebuchadnezzar heard that. He came and he called out in the last part of verse 26, "Come out of here." So Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out from the midst of the fire. And the satraps, administrators, governors, and the king's council gathered together. And they saw these men on whose bodies the fire had no power. Their hair on their head was not singed, nor were their garments affected, and the smell of fire was not found on them. Nebuchadnezzar, verse 28, spoke, saying, "Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who sent his angel and delivered his servant, who trusted in him, and they have frustrated the king's word and yielded their bodies, and they should not serve nor worship any god except their own." And from that point on, "Therefore I make a decree that any people, nations, and languages which speak anything amidst against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be cut in pieces, and their houses shall be made as ash heaps, because there is no other God who can deliver like this." The king is saying this. Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. You know, because these three men had discipline in their lives and they placed themselves in God's hand, he blessed them that day. God blessed them because they stood firm. They had discipline. What about us today? Do we have any fiery furnaces that we have to face every day? Not every day, but some days. Do we have those giant images that we don't necessarily have to bow down to, but you know what I'm saying, an analogy of it, giant images that we have to face? You know, when these battles come our way, will we be better prepared to face them as if we have discipline in our lives? There's a scripture, you don't have to turn there, in Ephesians 4, 27. The King James says, "Nor give place to the devil." So we shouldn't give the devil a place in our lives. But the NIV says, "Do not give the devil a foothold." Don't give the devil a foothold. Are we giving Satan footholds in our lives that he can exploit? You know, Satan uses little areas that we fall down on and tries to make those little areas big areas, footholds that he can get into in our lives. You know, he tries to separate us when he gets that foothold in there. He tries to separate us from God. He tries to destroy our relationship with him. He just tries to destroy our integrity and our peace of mind, happiness, and joy. Daniel made the decision, as we read back there in chapter 1, verse 8, we've already read it, not to let Satan have a foothold when he said these words, "I purposed in my heart to not defile himself in Babylon." When I was in high school, and I know all of you probably experienced the same thing, when gym time came, we had to dress out and go out on the field. And a certain time of the year we had, sometimes it was just basketball, it was football, it was this, but this was track season, time of the year that we had to go out and do track. And we had to run a quarter mile, one lap around the track, take a minute break, and then run it again. Take a minute break, and then run it again. You know, when I did that after one lap, I thought I was going to collapse. I'm not a track athlete. And I was a teenager then. And then the coach would make you do it again and again. Well, there was a young man by the name of Steve Prefontaine. Steve Prefontaine. And at his high school, he would have to do the same practice, except at his high school, because you can sign up for after-school practices in field and track, and you have a longer period, and they would do 20 laps around the track with one-minute intervals in between. And after the practice was over, Steve would go out by himself and do another 20 laps by himself. You talk about discipline in your life as an athlete. He was very disciplined in that. You know, he won many high school trophies competing in track events. He went on to the University of Oregon, where Mr. Hafley, I think, is from there, University of Oregon, and he continued on winning meet after meet after meet for the 10,000 to 2,000, from the 2,000 to the 10,000 meters. He was famous. He became famous. At the age of 19, he was on the cover of Sports Illustrated. He was the first person to ever endorse Nike shoes. You know, he was training for the 1976 Olympics. When he went to a party, he loved to party. He was a little cocky, they said, in his personality. Good-looking guy. Like a Robert Redford almost look back in the 70s. And having too much to drink that night, which he liked to do and party, he left that party and driving home, he flipped his MGB. Said it was, I read the story on this, it was an MGB and he died that night when the car flipped over on top of him. It was a convertible. You know, his record of running those races was held for 40 years. He was known as the best American athlete ever to run long distance. And last July, his record was broken by 13 hundredths of a second. That's how close it was. But it's been held for 40 years. You know, why do I tell this story? What's the moral of this story? It says, he was disciplined in his life in an area that he dedicated to. But he wasn't balanced. He wasn't disciplined in the areas that really count. You know, Matthew 23, we won't turn there, but Matthew 23 is about Christ talking about the Pharisees, how they were disciplined in areas of their life. But, as he says in verse 23, that you omitted the weightier matters in your discipline. You omitted justice, mercy, and faith. You've left those out. You tried doing all of the tithing and doing all these other things that could be seen among people, and he criticized them for many of those things, but they weren't disciplined in the right areas. What are the right areas? The ones that will last forever. The ones that are important to God. Those are the ones that we have to be disciplined in. Those are important to God. James 4:7 says, submit to God. Submit to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. That's discipline. When you discipline yourself, that's what you're doing. You're submitting to God, and you're resisting the devil. Daniel had the discipline in his life, which brought God blessings on his life and would defeat the enemy. That Daniel defeated the enemy, Satan. The third lesson we can learn from it is choose love over life. Choose love over life. If you remember earlier, I said that Daniel was the most likely in another place when Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in Babylon, when they were being tested by the fiery furnace. He wasn't there. Well, about 50 years later from that event of the fiery furnace, Daniel had his trial. He had his trial. You know, I always pictured Daniel as a man of about 30 or 40 years old in that lion's den, or even younger than that. But preparing this split sermon, I found out he was more close to mid-80s, almost 90 when he was put in the lion's den. He was an old man. Well, by some standards, I guess. Let's turn over there to chapter 6. Beginning in verse 1, it says here, "It pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 satraps to be over," or you can say princes, "to be over the whole kingdom. And over these three governors, of whom Daniel was one of them," that's how high up he was "one of them, and the satraps might give account to them, so that the king would suffer no loss. Then this Daniel distinguished himself above the governors," here we go again, jealousy, "above the governors and satraps, because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king gave thought to setting him over the whole realm," the whole thing. "So the governors and satraps sought to find some charges against Daniel," because they didn't like this, that he was thinking of doing that, "concerning the kingdom, and they could not find no charge or fault, because he was faithful. And there were not any error or fault found in him." They couldn't find anything wrong, so they had to trump up something. "Then these men said, 'We shall not find any charge against Daniel unless we find it against him concerning the law of his God.' So these governors and the satraps before the king said thus to him, 'King Darius, live forever.'" They were pleasing the king and saying nice things. "And they said," in verse 7, "all the governors of the kingdom, of the administrators and the satraps, councils and advisors, consulted together to establish a royal statute and to make a firm decree that whoever petitions any god or man for 30 days, except you, O king, shall be cast into the lion's den. Now, O king, establish the decree and sign the writing so that it cannot be changed, according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which does not alter." King Darius signed it, not really thinking what he was doing. He signed this decree that cannot be changed, not even by him. "Now when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went home and in his upper room and the windows and opened toward Jerusalem. He knelt down on his knees 3 times that day and prayed and gave thanks before his God, as was his custom since early days." Daniel knew this wasn't a small choice that he made. He knew it wasn't just a matter of taking a 30-day break from praying. He didn't compromise. Remember, that's one of those things I said, those 5 things. He didn't say, "Well, I'll just do it in hiding. They won't see me." You see, Daniel knew something important. He knew that if he held on to his love for God, that God would either protect him from the harm or God would just resurrect him later. I don't really think Daniel, in his own mind and heart, was interested in becoming, brunch for the lions or dinner or whatever. He didn't want that, and I don't think neither of us would want that either. He didn't want to die. He was no different than us. But he had to make a decision. He had no doubt. There would be no wavering, no second guessing, no hiding his prayers, as I said, no half-hearted response to that. He chose to love God over his own life. That's a tough thing when you're faced with being thrown in a lion's den. But let's read verse 11. "Then these men assembled and found Daniel praying and making supplication before God." They've got him on something. "And they went before the king and spoke concerning the king's decree. 'Have you not signed a decree that every man who petitions any god or man for 30 days except you, O king, shall be cast in the den of the lions?' And the king answered, said, 'This is true, according to the law of the Medes and Persians.'" Verse 13, "And he said to them before the king that Daniel, who is the one of the captives from Judah, who does not show due regard for you, O king, or for the decree that you have signed, but makes his petition 3 times a day." So they've told the king, it's Daniel. The king realizes what he has done. The king, in verse 14, "when he heard these words, was greatly displeased with himself." They had tricked him into signing this. "And set his heart on Daniel to deliver him. And he labored till the going down of the sun to deliver him. And these men approached the king and said to the king, "Know, O king, that it is the law, and the Medes and the Persians, that no decree or statute which the king established may be changed." There was nothing he could do about it. Nothing. So the king gave the command, and they brought Daniel and cast him into the den of the lions. But the king spoke, saying to Daniel, "Your God, whom you serve continually, he will deliver you." The king saying that to Daniel. Then they put the stone over there, and they shut it up. But verse 18, and the king went to his palace and spent the night fasting. No musicians this night were brought before him. And also his sleep went from him. I mean, he didn't sleep that night. Then the king arose very early in the morning and went in haste to the den of the lions. And when he came to the den, he cried out and lamenting the voice of Daniel. The king spoke, saying to Daniel, "Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to deliver you from the lions?" Daniel said to the king, "O king, live forever," was his response. "My God sent his angel and shut the lions' mouths so that they have not hurt me." God delivered. "Because I was found innocent before him, and I also, O king, I have done no wrong before you." Then the king was exceedingly glad for him and the command that they should take Daniel up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no injury whatsoever was found on him, because he believed in his God. Those people, it goes on to say, that brought this accusation and brought Daniel's attention to him, where they were cast into the lion's den, along with their families. Verse 26 says, "King Darius, I make a decree that in every domain of my kingdom, men must tremble and fear before the God of Daniel, for he is the living God and the steadfast forever. His kingdom is one which shall not be destroyed, and his dominion shall endure to the end." His dominion shall endure to the end. You know, there are many lessons, a lot more, that we can learn from the book of Daniel and Daniel's life. Today, we've just talked about identity theft, how Satan wants to change our identity. Daniel could have easily just fit in with the customs of Babylon when he went there. But instead, he always kept that identity, just as we're to keep our identity in Christ today. We're to follow his example. And the disciples, I mean not the disciples, but the discipline of Daniel was to stay close to God. Stay close to God each day so that Satan couldn't get that foothold in there that he wanted to. That he couldn't get a foothold in his life. Just as we are now examining our lives before the Passover season, and it's all those areas that we have that we know that we have, that Satan could get a foothold in, we're to be examining ourselves and preparing ourselves for the Passover and seeing where we need to change and where we need to improve. Well, in conclusion, brethren, Daniel chose love over God, over his own physical life, didn't he? Bible commentary says that Daniel probably lived to be over 100 years old, and he continued to prosper. And we know he is known for the end prophecies that God gave him to set down for us in the book of Daniel that we read many times in prophecy sermons. But the Apostle Paul, final scripture, said in 1 Timothy 6:11, he says, "But you, O man of God, flee these things and pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, love, patience, gentleness. Fight the good fight of faith and lay hold on eternal life, to which you were also called."